Welcome to episode 294 of After the Credits. I am your co-host, Brian Antunes, and I'm joined today by fellow co-host,
Dale McGladrey from MotleyJournal.com.
We're missing Colleen. She was busy this weekend and told us to forge ahead, so I took that as a sign that she wasn't interested.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to. I watched a noir film over the break, and I was really, really wanting to gab with her about that. But that, I guess that'll have to wait.
Well, you can gab with me about it. I'm not as intensely knowledgeable on the noir, but
I'm going to gab. It was wonderful. This film blew my mind.
Well, okay. Well, I know you said you watched a lot of movies, and I watched a lot of stuff. Why don't we jump right in? Do you want to start with some movies?
Okay. Like we talked about last time, I was saving up Christmas movies, and I did kind of my own personal Christmas movie film fest, really. 34 Christmas movies, predominantly Hallmark and Lifetime.
Holy smokes!
Oh, yeah. No, I was...
Holy smokes!
I just didn't realize what kind of a rabbit hole I kind of fell into. Four of them I couldn't finish. One of them was because it was a musical. I'm sorry, Dolly. I really wanted to like your thing, but I'm just so not into musicals. A couple of them had some, you know, moderate amount of fast forwarding, but I think I understand the appeal of Hallmark after all of this. Like, it's almost like a TV series, but with movies. Like, the emotional beat, like, you just, you know, like a TV series, you have your favorite set of characters and you know what you're going to get out of it for the most part. Like, a good TV series will challenge you and things will evolve, but you kind of like to know what kind of emotional ride you're going to have. And with Hallmark, even though they're different settings and different actors, it's like, it's the same thing. Like, I get it. And to a lesser extent, the Lifetime and some of the other movies, but Hallmark is so damn consistent. I mean, I heard the opening theme that they did their movies, and I knew exactly what I was going to get. And there was a bit of comfort with, I mean, especially with all this COVID shit, you know, in December and you want to feel good. It's like, I get the appeal in a way that I never understood before. And I have to admit, there was actually
That's awesome.
There was actually a couple movies that I genuinely enjoyed. The acting, for the most part, is like definitely they're definitely not A-list actors in most of these. Like, they're okay actors, but for leading, when there was somebody that could really act in the role, it was noticeable, and it wasn't that many movies, sadly. But I enjoyed a couple of them.
Do you have, like, I was going to say, do you have like one or two that you would say these are totally worth searching out and watching?
No. maybe next Christmas. Like, if we remember for November, I will definitely pull out. There was one with, I should have written the names down. There was one with I don't remember the actor's names. It's not worth looking at. Ashley Green was one in, okay. She was in, and like I said, like, she just kind of, her and actually the other actors were kind of a notch above the typical actors that movie. And I guess I found that I have a Christmas movie type too. I mean, these are all filled with tropes. We kind of talked about the tropes before. At least I sort of remember. I could probably do a whole podcast now on Christmas movie tropes, with Hallmark anyway. But for me, the Christmas movies I enjoyed the most had some sort of mystery that they were trying to solve. So the one with Ashley Green, there was a charm bracelet they were trying to find the owner of based on what the charms were. And it was just kind of delightful. I mean, they're all rom-coms, right? So there was that too. It's like, I feel like in the 21st century, we've lost the art of the rom-com. There was, for me, a golden age of rom-com. they don't even, I think, call them that anymore, do they? But anyway.
They consider that taboo, which is too bad.
Yeah, I enjoyed, what was it, the 90s, I guess, was kind of, or was it the early 2000s? With Mandy Moore and a bunch of others, kind of this golden, anyway. A bit of a new respect for Christmas movies, even though they are, I'm not going to hold them for any awards or anything like that. And the other weird thing was actually when I started watching regular movies again, it was a bit jarring because all of these Christmas movies, they all open kind of the same way. Like they have either outright orchestral Christmas music or something that's reminiscent of Christmas music, and it's like highly compressed, so it's kind of a wall of sound, and it opens up with, you know, some sort of aerial shot of either the downtown Main Street or, you know, a city skyline. And so I can't remember the first movie, it was like either Wander or something like that, and it was just like so strange. It's like, this is the wrong soundtrack. It's like, this doesn't feel right. I had to kind of get back into normal movie mode. Anyway, so, right.
I love it.
Regular movies. But yeah, next November, I'll definitely, there was probably three, maybe four that I legitimately enjoyed. Oh yeah. And there was a couple cooking movies involving cooking, Christmas movies involving cooking that I kind of also enjoyed too. But anyway, speaking of Wander, I don't know if you've seen that yet. It's kind of a conspiracy theory mindfuck with Aaron Eckhart and Tommy Lee Jones. These movies aren't typically my jam, but the mystery was kind of interesting enough. I watched it through to the end, and it definitely was of that whole kind of conspiracy genre. Completely different from that, Godmothered with,
which I still haven't seen.
Yeah. With Isla Fisher and, I should have written the actors' names down. Anyway, a godmother in training goes into the real world because reasons to give kind of a Cinderella makeover to a deserving girl. And of course things don't go as planned. In fact, they go terribly bloody wrong, but, it wasn't without its charms. There was enough funny moments in it to kind of get over the shtick, and it had shtick and, moments in it that I actually found genuinely funny. So, with that, it's like, yeah, if you're looking for just kind of some fluff, it was fun. I just got an air pop up here.
It's on Disney, right?
I think so. I can't remember. And you mentioned last podcast Hocus Pocus, and yes. I hadn't seen that, so I decided to watch it. And my God, I miss Bette Midler.
Right?
Yeah. And the movie actually holds up fairly well. I was surprised. It was pretty silly, but I got a kick out of it. So, go 1993. Wonder Woman 1984. Woo-hoo. Yes. Ooh. Wonder Woman 1984. I think I'm pretty much in the same camp you were with it. I enjoyed it, but didn't find it awesome. Maybe I had too big of expectations, but, for reasons I haven't quite put my finger on, it just was not, stand up and cheer. And I was really hoping for that. But having said that, I'm glad I watched it. It was fun to have that around Christmas time.
I really, really like Chris Pine in that.
Yeah.
A lot. He's pretty great.
They have great chemistry.
More like, Chris Pine.
Yeah. Is that going to be possible?
Yeah. And not just that though. He's really, really good in general. And he just has like this, I don't know. He has a very nice lovability factor. And I was not always a Chris Pine fan, so he's grown on me.
There is a early movie where he plays kind of a Nazi liking kind of right wing guy. Was it? It might be a Guy Ritchie movie. Guns into one of those. It was hilarious after seeing him in Star Trek. Recognize him in early. It's always fun when you see actors in early roles that you had no. But yeah, I agree. He's got a charm that works
for sure.
Alien Avengers from 1996. This is a sci-fi B movie, kind of in the finest sense. It's just kind of a really wacky movie about aliens that come to Earth on vacation. It stars George Wendt, who played Norm on Cheers, and I think it's kind of also lampooning that whole. I don't know if it's kind of the Midwest or kind of a 1960s family kind of sensibility, and how it's kind of maybe just a thin veneer over shite, but it was just kind of a crazy fun movie. Modern Persuasion. Have you seen this or heard of this? Based on the Jane Austen book, stars Alicia Witt.
Oh, I did see this.
I don't.
Yes,
know.
I saw this. I thought it was okay.
Yeah, it was okay. Exactly. It was okay. I wanted to see if you'd seen that because, you know, Jane Austen. And I couldn't remember how close, like, I haven't read the book, but I feel like I've seen a couple Persuasion movies now. And I wasn't sure how closely it stuck to the original story. But
and my knee jerk, if I remember correctly, is it's very loosely based on Persuasion. I thought DeWitt was really fun in it, but the movie overall I thought was just kind of very, I don't know, almost like made for TV, just not really up to par, which I thought was disappointing, but it was still a fun watch.
It felt a little bit thin soup. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was fun enough that I kind of wanted to mention it. Like, I think, yeah. Okay. So here's one that I actually quite enjoyed: Love, Wedding, and Other Disasters. It's Maggie Grace, Jeremy Irons, and Diane Keaton. And it's a romantic comedy. It has kind of a Love Actually vibe to it a little bit, only a little bit. It's one of these, there's like four or five different stories of people coming together in this crazy thing, but it's centered on Maggie Grace's character, who's trying to put together a wedding kind of with some last minute complications. And it was fun with a smidge of batshit crazy that just kind of glossed over any of the problems. Like, I found myself enjoying it through, and there was like, oh, well, that's kind of, I think the only real problem I had with it, was there was a sour note. Diane Keaton plays a blind woman, and I didn't attribute this to her fault, but maybe more the director's or something, but the blindness kind of felt like it was played for yucks in kind of the wrong way in a few of the scenes, at least I felt a little bit. But on the other hand, they did make some interesting kind of points with it too. And I think Jeremy Irons and Diane Keaton are an age appropriate couple. They kind of maybe felt like it. I don't know, but, the movie was a lot of fun. And like I said, there were a couple batshit crazy things I don't want to spoil with some of the couples. One of them was chained together because reasons, and then the mob gets involved. It's just, it was kind of silly, and they got away with it. another one I really enjoyed was Palm Springs with Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti and J.K. Simmons. Have you talked about this one? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Groundhog Day.
I can't remember if I talked about it, but I did watch it.
Yeah,
I
really enjoyed it. It's interesting how the Groundhog Day trope, like, they don't even have to explain it, right? The movie just starts with that, and I don't think anybody got confused. And I thought this one had a lot of really smart moments, and I loved how they explored like the mundanity and also the awesomeness of that in a way that I hadn't really seen before. So definitely thumbs up from me, and great performances, I thought, with all of the actors. Parallel.
Yeah. Well, I'm an Andy Samberg fan anyways, so I really like him.
He's hit
and it's streaming on Amazon Prime.
He's hit and miss for me, but this one was definitely a hit. I must admit, it's more hit than miss. But he sometimes, like when he misses the mark for me, it's usually really bad. It's like, oh, I can't stand
Hot Rod.
Actually, it was Colleen that didn't like Hot Rod, I think.
Well, Colleen is wrong. So
I enjoyed Hot Rod, actually.
I love Hot Rod.
Parallel is a movie about a group of Finns who discover a dimensional portal to variations of our dimension. And so sci-fi, obviously. And they figure out ways of exploiting it so that they're all getting some personal gain from it. But they kind of also discover the true nature of each other's personalities, and some of that ain't so good. So it was, I thought, a really solid kind of character study using this sci-fi trope. And it was an interesting little movie. Not a stand-up and cheer movie, but it was definitely, for me, an enjoyable watch. And I did see Possessor.
I'm trying to remember if I've seen this, because it sounds like something that it would be totally up my alley. It sounds like I've seen it, but I don't remember. Actually, I'm looking at it and I don't remember actually seeing it. So who knows? Sorry. You saw Possessor? Oh my God.
I saw Possessor. Yep. I liked the ideas the movie explored, but the style and the sensibility didn't especially work for me.
What?
Yep. I'm looking forward to see what Cronenberg Jr. has coming along. His dad did a cameo on Star Trek Discovery.
Yes, and he was really good.
He was.
I thought
he really worked. He definitely had a otherly vibe.
Very much so. I really like his glasses.
Yes. Yeah, I was thinking of that too. Another movie you mentioned last time was The Witches, and I agree they should have stuck with the original.
Right?
Yeah. And like you said, it was a perfectly fine movie. Octavia Spencer, Chris Rock doing voiceover. But I have to say, like, what Zemeckis did with Anne Hathaway's character was bizarre. Like, that just did not work for me. But I mean, in all, I think, you know, if you're looking for something to watch with your kids, be perfectly fine. Oh, for little,
you didn't think it was too scary for little kids?
Yeah, no, it's too scary for little kids. I don't know what age.
Yeah, because I mean, that's what I'm. Yeah, I'm the same. Like, I just don't know what age appropriate it is. Like, I don't think it's like, I don't think my 10-year-old niece would like it, but I don't think I could show it to my 5-year-old niece because I think she'd be too scared. So, like, I don't know who the audience is for this movie. That's what I don't understand.
Well, I mean, it's based on Roald Dahl's kids book. So I assume there's a kids audience out there somewhere. Okay.
I don't know.
Help us out, audience. I don't know. I don't have kids. I had niece and nephew that were that age once, a long time ago. Promising Young Women.
Oh, yes.
So really cool. One of my friends has figured out a way that we can do kind of a synchronized remote viewing. So the four of us watched it sort of together and did a messenger discussion watching it. And we had a really, like, this movie was great for generating discussion. And the movie had some problems for me, but overall I still enjoyed it. And the framing and the cinematography were noteworthy. I don't want to spoil any of the scenes, but there were moments where the way a character was framed against the background. And at one point there was actually God rays coming through the window, framing a character after a notable moment in the movie. Like, I was just, some of those moments were well done. And definitely the story had some great moments in it. Overall, it was, like, it's one of those movies I'm still chewing on, and I love those kinds of movies. So for that reason, I thought it was good. The character's arc made me really sad, and it had to be, but I still wonder about that. So I definitely, if it's a movie that you think you should watch, I think you should watch it. Or if you're interested in it. Yeah, I forget exactly. All I remember is you had mixed feelings on it, but I don't remember exactly what they were.
I think for me, I have some concerns about the message and how it's delivered. Like, I can appreciate that it's a fictional film, but I don't know. I have some mixed feelings about how some of the issues, some of the, I don't know. I have issues with revenge movies anyways.
Right.
Like, it's always been something that sits kind of heavy with me. And this one, though I appreciate it on another level, I don't know if I can really get behind the revenge movie, even though I can understand the motivation behind it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if the motivation is really, I think the motivation does not match the, I guess what she's doing, like the actual revenge. I think it's kind of overkill, if you can call it that. Mm-hmm. And I had real concerns about, how it's easier to dismiss the movie as this revenge fantasy because it is so over the top and the message kind of gets lost with that. And that's something that I've started to think of a little bit more, because I think overall the movie is really interesting and visually it's really, really well made and the performances are outstanding. But the key is really the message. I think that certainly feels like what should be at the center of it. And I think the message kind of gets not lost, but it's easier to write it off as, you know, a fantasy, and like a woman kind of losing her mind kind of thing, in this ultimate goal for revenge. And then the importance of what happened to her friend and what happened to her gets lost in that. And I don't know if it's as effective because of that, but that's more of me reading, the sort of the response to the meaning of the movie than the movie itself. Cause I think the movie itself is really, really well made.
You're articulating that way better than I did. I share a lot of those concerns. I know for me, I don't, the message, as far as I can discern it from the movie, was not lost, but I would share that fear. Like, that's, well, and I guess that's the thing with movies, right? The different audience people take different things from it.
But yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that was really interesting in the conversation that emerged after the movie was released was people were talking about how it does deserve to be it deserves some sort of recognition for what it's doing, because it is doing, like, technically speaking, it's doing a lot of things right, and the story itself is really interesting. There are people like, but the problem is, will anybody actually watch it because it is so violent? I mean, I'm game. I'm all game for, you know, bloody revenge movies. But, you know, the reality of it is that a lot of the Academy is going to look at it and go, yeah, no, turn it off. And the movie isn't going to get the recognition it deserves. I don't know. Not that it matters, but.
Yes, that's where I was going. I don't give a fuck about the Academy. Those
no.
They are so irrelevant for judging what a good film is.
No, but the reality of it remains that, you know, if it does get that stamp of approval that it's nominated or it wins, more people are more likely to see it. And I mean, yes, this is still kind of like this fringy indie movie that even though I have my own mixed feelings about the messaging and how it's perceived at the end, it's still worth seeing, and the discussion that it generates is worthwhile having. But if people don't see the movie, then that discussion is never going to happen. And the reality of it is that most people are probably not going to see it because it doesn't get any recognition. It doesn't matter if, you know, we talk about it and support it. If on a bigger scale, it doesn't become more part of the mainstream, it still remains this little indie movie that a lot of people never saw. And that's sad. That's super sad.
Yeah.
But I mean, Winnell is definitely like a director to watch. She's super talented and it's definitely like one of the better debuts that I've seen in a long time.
And now my last movie. Finally, people are saying, I'm really stoked about this one. It was Double Indemnity. Oh, God, I can't say it. Double
Indemnity.
Indemnity, thank you. From 1944. Wow, I had never seen it. So a friend of mine had a special edition box set. Yeah, and there was a 1973 remake that was on there, so I watched that as well. But I loved the 1944 version, which is apparently credited with kicking off film noir.
Mm.
The movie had this amazing script, and Fred McMurray and Barbara Stanwyck and Edward G. Robinson were just stellar in the delivery of it. The movie was directed and co-written by Billy Wilder, who I've really come to love. And it was during the height of the Hays Movie Code, which limited, you know, what they could say and the subject matter in the movies. So people couldn't have affairs. So Hollywood developed this like innuendo and ways of indicating, like, the whole smoking a cigarette. a lot of that was because of the Hays Code. And you had to show, like, they did a little bit more than just kiss here. And this mm-hmm. the language in this movie, like, people go to YouTube and Google Double Indemnity, and there's clips on YouTube of some of the great moments in the film, like Barbara Stanwyck, Fred Murray's getting a little kind of maybe a bit fresh, and Barbara Stanwyck's like, "Well, I think you're speeding here," and he's like, "Oh, what's the speed limit?" You were going 90 in a 30 zone, and I'm butchering it, but just so many great moments like that. And these two were like, McMurray was doing comedies for Disney, and then he pulls this one off, and it's just, the chemistry is great, and it holds up really well too. For the men are calling the woman like dear and darling. And I think other than that, there was not a lot of those, like, oh my God, you could never do that today. So except for like this old technology.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw this. So kids back in the day, at the beginning of time, Netflix sent out DVDs. And I remember this was part of probably the first batch of DVDs I ever got from my Netflix account, because it was one of these movies that everybody said he needed to watch. And I haven't seen a lot of stuff from like the 40s and 50s. So I had put this one on my list, and it eventually came because, you know, you'd have your list of priorities, and they would like randomly ship you stuff. So you never even knew what you were going to get, really. They would show up and I'm like, oh yeah, okay. So I remember sitting down to watch it, and I watched it twice before I mailed it back, because it's so good. And I am not like film noir. I can appreciate it, but it's not my like forte, but I love this movie so much. And like you, I think it really, really holds up, and it's not as jarring as some of the other, not even noir movies, but like some of the other films from like the 30s, 40s and 50s that feel like they're on from another planet altogether. This one feels very timely, and it always, I think that's why it's still such a popular film, because it just holds up so, so well. And the Stanwyck is so gorgeous. It's amazing.
When I watched the 1973 version that had Richard Crenna and Samantha Eggar in it, and actually, Stephen Bochco, I don't know if people will recognize that name. He produced like Hill Street Blues and L.A. Law and NYPD Blue, was writer on the script. And the script had a lot of intact stuff from the original. It was somewhat modified, if only for the time, but also some other stuff. It was actually, so academically, it was an interesting watch. To like, okay, why did they leave that in and then take this other thing out? Because I watched them back to back. But for the dialogue, which is pretty damn close, Crenna and Eggar just butcher it. It's like you really see in spades, not that we didn't already know this, just what difference like the actors make. And I don't know what the situation was, whether they were like didn't have time to rehearse or a time crunch or what was going on, but Krenna was just bulldozing through the lines. Like there was no nuance, there was no pause for effect. It was just like this straight read. And it was like, especially after having just seen the 1944 version, I was cringing. I was just like, my God, like, fuck, didn't you watch the original? Like, couldn't you even just try and mimic what, you know, if you're going to like butcher it, at least try and imitate something good, like Christ. So, I don't recommend the 73 one unless you're like a film student and you just want to get the comparison and then it might be worth it. But I definitely, yes, 1944 Double Indemnity. It's hit my top 10 movie list, actually. And that's my movies.
I'm actually just going to check if it's still streaming on Netflix. I don't think it is. Like I say, I did get it originally. Yeah, no, it's not. That's too bad. Oh, but it's on Prime Video, so there. Oh, wait, it's not. Ah, fuck it. It's not. Disappointing. But I noticed that Prime Video has this watch party thing. What? Oh, I'm going to have to explore this.
It's a lot of fun. In these days of COVID, we didn't use watch. I forget what we used. But it definitely, it's not the same as being in the same room, but it sure feels a lot nicer than watching movies alone.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I have some movies. As I said, before we started recording, we were kind of reminiscing about how the holidays went. And I watched a lot of stuff. Usually this time of year is super busy. I feel like I didn't watch. I don't know if it's because the entire awards season thing is different this year, because there weren't as many movies. Like, I don't actually know. It feels like there were still a lot of movies. But it feels like I didn't watch a lot of, like, award stuff. I really just watched movies. But I spent more time trying to figure out what I was going to talk about than actually, like, making notes. But I'll power through some of the stuff that I thought was worth mentioning. For one reason or another. So I wanted to start off with Let Them Talk, which is the new Steven Soderbergh, the man that like never rests. This one is an HBO Max with Meryl Streep and Diane Weiss and Candice Bergen. And so Meryl Streep plays a world-renowned author who has not written a lot of books and is kind of a book snob. And she is invited to England to receive like this prize, but she doesn't fly for whatever reasons, I guess. And so she decides she's going to take the Queen Mary too. So this, so she's going to cruise across the ocean to go and receive her prize. And she decides she's going to take her two best friends who she hasn't seen in like decades along for the trip as a way to like reconnect. And then shit happens. It also co-stars Lucas Hedges, who plays her nephew and also like personal assistant, and Gemma Chan, who plays her editor. And they're basically trying to convince her to write a sequel to her debut novel, which was like a massive hit that basically got her all her thing. Or perhaps not notoriously, because I think it works out quite well. But one of the big buzzes about the movie was that Soderbergh, it wasn't like completely scripted. It was only partly scripted. And then it was left for the actors to kind of fill in the blanks as far as dialogue. And it was shot on the Queen Mary during the trip. Basically, the cruise was fully booked. So you have like these actors and this camera crew roaming around the ship with like a bunch of cruisers, which I thought was kind of amazing. I went on a cruise to Alaska, never thinking that I would love it. And I did enjoy every second of it. So watching that just made me want to cruise again, which I never thought I'd want to do. But you know, after you've been stuck at home for like a year, you're like, huh, a cruise sounds really amazing right now. it's just a lot of fun, and the performances are wonderful. And I was really, really happy to see Candice Bergen, who I haven't seen in anything in a while. And she's just so good here. So, 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 so good. It's wonderful. I really enjoyed it. Maybe not as wonderful, but very scenery chewing. Hillbilly Elegy on Netflix. This is the new Ron Howard. It's based on a book. I guess a memoir from, a lawyer named J.D. Vance. And so this is like based on his life. And it co-stars Glenn Close and Amy Adams. And they are just like chewing through the entire thing. It's a family. It really is like this hillbilly drama with these two actresses just like going at it full board. It's not great. But it's not terrible. Like it's fine. I don't know. It's okay.
It sounds like Ron Howard, right? He's kind of a little bit milquetoast.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing is, like, the movie looks great because he knows how to shoot shit. Like, he's, you know, proficient, and the actors are excellent. The story is kind of like, well, you know, I'm sad that you lived through this, but it feels very like paint by number. Weirdly. But I mean, Amy Adams and Glenn Close are really good, and they're really good here, over the top, but really good. Arch Enemy, which is the new film from Adam Egypt Mortimer, who I am in love with because he directed Daniel Isn't Real, which I still think is like one of the best things I've seen in years. So this is the superhero movie with Joe Manganiello, who is like this bum on the street who thinks he's a superhero, and then stuff happens. It's weird, and it's interesting, and it's doing some fascinating things that I haven't really seen before with superheroes. Yeah, I'm a little bit on the fence because on the one hand, I like that it's trying something new and it really goes for it. It has some animation mixed in that I don't think really works. Like, I like that it's trying it, but it doesn't work for the story. But Manganiello is really good in it. Like, he, this is like his cup of tea. Like, he loves this stuff, and he's clearly really enjoying himself. I don't know. I really want to like it, but it doesn't fully work. So I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence on it.
Don't you hate it when that happens?
Yeah, because I really want to say, like, watch it, but it's not, like, I can't, like, fully recommend it without saying,
Something in there, but.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It just doesn't quite get over the fence, but it's so close. I think it's worth checking out if you're kind of vaguely interested in it, because it is, I think it is trying some interesting things, and it does work to some extent. And Manganiello is really fun to watch. And Zoli Giggs and Skylar Brooks, I think, are their names. They're like a brother and sister that sort of become his sort of sidekicks. They're both really fantastic. So if nothing else, it's worth checking out for the performances. Midnight Sky, which is the George Clooney starring directing movie on Netflix, which I thought was okay. I don't know what else to say. It's fine. The space stuff is cool. I don't know. And it's George Clooney. He's fun to watch. I thought it was fine. It's so forgettable. It's like the kind of thing you watch it now, and like in 6 months, I'm not going to remember that George Clooney movie. But that's that. News of the world.
There's a place for those kinds of movies, you know?
Yeah, there is.
When you just need to like watch something over dinner. Speaking personally, need a movie that's going to deliver enough. You don't have to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I did really like, there's a couple of scenes throughout that are really, really like powerful and like really beautiful. And the movie looks amazing. And the space stuff is really like top notch, like visual effects, and it looks amazing. And the whole, like, I love the cinematography in this, because I mean, at some point he leaves where he is and he's traversing across this basic Arctic tundra, and it's beautiful. Like, it's really, really beautiful. Visually, it's beautiful. But the movie is just feels kind of been there, done that. Like, it doesn't feel like it's offering up anything new. So that's why I'm kind of like, meh. News of the World. This is again like another sort of like milquetoast movie. It's Paul Greengrass directing Tom Hanks. probably the best part about this movie is the premise. So Tom Hanks plays, I guess it takes place, sometime either just before or just after the Civil War. I'm not 100% sure on the thing there. This is how interested I was in it. But I thought the concept was cool. He plays a guy, because I guess literacy was not a big thing. So he plays a guy that literally went around from town to town reading the news. Like, this was a thing they did, which I thought was fascinating. The story is fine. It looks amazing. And it's a really beautifully shot Western. But I found the story just kind of like, meh. Like, other than that basic concept of the idea of what his job is, I was very sort of I was very underwhelmed, which I'm disappointed because it's two people that I really like. Like, mm-hmm. Greengrass is super, and Tom Hanks is like top notch. But yeah, I wasn't super taken by it.
So do you think it would have been watchable without Hanks?
Honestly, I would have had zero interest to watch. Well, okay, I shouldn't say that, because I would still be curious because it's Paul Greengrass. Let's just say if it wasn't this director and it didn't have like a name actor that I liked, this story never would have gotten made. Like, it's just so, like, I found the story just so underwhelming. Like, the basic concept is things happen. Tom Hanks ends up having to take this little girl who is now become his charge, like, not across the country, but, you know, somewhere, to deliver her to family. And then shit happens along the way. And it sounds like there could be some cool action in there. And there are some really neat, like, stretches of moments that are really good to watch. Like, they're beautiful, but it just, like, it's just so uninteresting. I just found it kind of bland overall, which is disappointing. You can't win them all, basically, is what it comes down to. The Way Back. So this is the Ben Affleck sports movie directed by Gavin O'Connor. So Ben Affleck plays this sort of down on his luck, drunk, high school basketball star who is asked to return to coach the team for reasons. So he's an alcoholic teaching a high school basketball team.
We've never seen that before.
Never. Admittedly, like, honestly, it's such a cookie cutter thing, but the movie really works. And I think it works because Ben Affleck's actually pretty good in it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty great. And I thought he was really good in it. Like, it's completely what you expect it to be. It's a redemption story. You've seen them a million times. It doesn't do anything new, but it's, you know, it's well made. And Affleck is really good. Like, well, he's really compelling.
We've talked about it before. There's, for me anyway, there's nothing wrong if it's a story I've seen before, if it's well done.
Exactly.
That is the key, if it's well done.
Yeah, and I was actually quite surprised because I watched it somewhat reluctantly, and I thought it was quite good. So Westerns were kind of a thing for me. We'll get to it later. But I also watched Let Him Go, which is the new, I guess it's a thriller with Diane Lane and Kevin Costner, who are so good together. Like, I can't tell you. They're so good together. So they play, he is a retired sheriff and she's his wife. And their son dies. And their daughter-in-law and grandson, and like, she remarries, and they basically take the grandson away, and this new husband is kind of a piece of work. So basically, Diane Lane decides that she's going to go and rescue her grandson, and Kevin Costner is like, well, you can't go alone. So they go together. And it's like the 1950s or 60s is my kind of guess. And they basically go across the country. Well, they go to Montana to go and rescue their grandson, and, you know, stuff happens. You've seen it before, but you've never seen it with Diane Lane and Kevin Costner being amazing together. That's really why it works. I really, really liked it. But then I fully realized that I have blinders for Kevin Costner. So,
well, you've just sold me on it. I when I saw that in the list, I was like, pass.
I would recommend it. They eat pie together in a car. Like, just like little things that just work. I don't know.
I'll have to see for myself.
Yes, I recommend it. Sound of Metal, which is Riz Ahmed being amazing, like amazing. So this movie, in this movie, he plays a drummer who is going deaf, and it's basically this guy's redemption story. Yes, he's going deaf. He wants to keep playing music. He can't seem to accept the fact that he's going deaf. It's spectacular. Like, the performance is amazing, and the trajectory of his sort of coming to terms with the fact that he can no longer hear is just, it's so powerful. And the final scene is amazing. And they do this interest, like the sound design in this movie is probably the best I've never really understood what it's like to start to go deaf. And I kind of get the sense that maybe I have a better understanding of it now, just based solely on the sound design from this movie. I could be totally off. I mean, I'll never know. Hopefully, fingers crossed, knock on wood. But it's, the sound design is like just superb, superb. And the performances are spectacular. I cannot say enough good things about this movie. It's totally worth searching out. Dan is not into big drama, like drama movies with a capital D, and he loved it too. Like, we both really, really enjoyed it. Highly, highly, highly recommended.
What was this called again?
Sound of Metal. It's just, it's tops. Tops for sure. Another amazing film. This one I did not see with Dan. This is not a Dan cup of movie, but it's Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always. This is Eliza Hittman's new movie with Sydney Flanagan and Talia Ryder. So it's about a young woman who is pregnant who has to travel to, I think they go to New York, so that she can have an abortion. And it is, it's hard to watch, but it's really, really, really good. And there is a scene, the title of the movie comes from, I guess, the questionnaire that they give, that they go through just before you have the procedure done. And there's a scene, where she's going through this questionnaire, which is where the movie gets its title, which is just fucking heartbreaking, and it completely unravels the entire movie. It takes it to like another level. Like, it was already good, and then you get that scene and it just like gut punches you. It's so good. So, so good. So I highly recommend it. It's wonderful. I'm Your Woman, Julia Hart's new movie. She did Fast Color a couple of years ago. This one stars Rachel Brosnahan. It's streaming on Amazon Prime. Also amazing. I wasn't sure what to expect, but it's so good. So Rachel Brosnahan plays the widow of a mob guy, I guess. And it literally is about the aftermath of what happens to her and her baby after something happens to him. And it's all from her perspective. And it's so, so good. And she's so amazing. We love this movie. It's so awesome.
I actually watched this movie too. I had so many movies. I enjoyed it. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Not as much as you did, but overall, I enjoyed it. It's hard to think that this is the same actor who did Miss Maisel. Like,
which I still haven't seen, so.
The characters are so completely different. It was, but I definitely, I enjoyed the story. And it was a different kind of twist. Like, some of the reveals, those wonderful kinds of reveals where you just start thinking about the whole story you've seen so far and it puts it in a different context. And I really enjoyed that part of it. There were some moments in the movie that were choices, I guess. And I was like really thinking about why it happened that way, which is generally a good thing. So overall, I like finishing a movie with knowing, I don't know, this is me. I like putting things in cubby holes. And I think at the end of that movie, I couldn't put everything in a cubby hole, which is probably a good thing. But yeah, I would recommend it too.
I also watched Croods: A New Age. So listen, it's not as sophisticated as some of the other animated movies this year. But god damn it, this movie is a lot of fun. I laughed so hard. It was exactly what I needed. I could almost see Nick Cage in every single moment. And I thought, I wish this was live action so I could actually see him doing it. It was just so much fun. And it's so colorful and so lovely and so fun. And just, I don't know, I just loved it. I just thought it was so much fun. I really, really enjoyed this movie, probably way more than I should have, but I did. I thought it was lovely. The New Mutants, I finally watched The New Mutants, and I fully agree with everybody else. Way better than I had anticipated. And I like how it's kind of like this, you know, by the bootstraps, get this movie done. It just feels like so... like low budget and like, just, I don't know. I'm sure it's not, but it just kind of feels that way because it's in one location and I don't know. It just feels so scrappy. And I kind of love that. I love that it doesn't look, you know, totally sleek and it doesn't have, you know, tons and tons of effects, though it has just enough to keep it visually interesting. I really enjoyed it. I would watch more with this cast. Bring it on.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely enjoyed it too, but I think you enjoyed it more than I did. But I'm looking forward to more from this cast. I agree.
I seem to have been enjoying things way more than most people. I'm just, you know, joy for life. I watched one of my favorite movies of the year, if maybe not my favorite movie of the year, Sean Durkin's The Nest. So this is Jude Law and Carrie Coon as this couple. Jude Law plays a shady business guy who is always trying to find kind of like the next big thing. And he convinces his wife that the next big thing for them is in Europe. So he goes ahead and rents this enormous mansion. And he's basically playing himself up in order to, you know, make more money. And the family is in turmoil. So it's this very... low key, so almost like a chamber drama until it's not. And Jude Law and Carrie Coon are so good, like, otherworldly good. Like Carrie Coon is just at some point she like totally loses it on him, and it's like the most glorious thing to watch ever because she says things that you're like, I've always wanted to yell at someone. Oh, it's very uncomfortable because it doesn't feel like, it feels both really raw and real and very like otherworldly. Like this would never happen to anybody in real life. But then you start thinking, you're like, we all have a little bit of this in us. So it's, I mean, I love Sean Durkin. This was like so good. I was so taken by this movie. Probably my favorite movie of the year. Don't hold me on it. I still haven't done my list. But it might be.
Oh, so this is a 2020 movie, not a 2021 movie?
Yeah, it's a 2020 movie.
Okay.
And that's it for me for movies. What do you got for TV? I watched lots of TV too.
Oh, I did not watch as much TV. But speaking of Nicolas Cage, have you caught The History of Swear Words on Netflix?
We've watched like two or three episodes. We haven't been I'm trying to resist the urge to watch them all at once. So we watch them whenever we have a little bit of extra time because they are so funny.
I didn't have that much self-control. I just ripped through. I loved this show way more than I should have. Maybe it was like the 12-year-old in me. I don't know. But Nicolas Cage hosts. He's trying to play that kind of professorial, thoughtful kind of person, which kind of is more annoying, but it's sometimes it's funny because it's so ridiculous. I don't know. What did you think about that?
Well, I thought that went out the window pretty quick. And I must say, I was watching it and I'm like, this is totally a show for Dale because you are big into words and language. And I knew for sure this would be something that if you hadn't watched it yet, it would be something that you would be watching soon.
You were so right. So each show covers a different swear word. Some of them are, by today's standards, barely swear words. Like I didn't think damn would be as interesting as it was. I don't know if you've got there yet. Pussy was way more interesting than I thought it would be. And of course, they start off with Fock, which is kind of the granddaddy. The thing about this show that really kind of makes it work is just not some kind of sophomoric kind of thing is they actually have some scholars, and that one professor who wrote the book, when she's talking about words and that matter of fact kind of scholarly thing, it is hilarious. Like this older white haired woman.
She's not even my favorite. My favorite's the lady that wrote that like literally was a writer for the Webster's Dictionary. She's my total.
I was going to mention her too. Like what she was talking about, bitch, when they did bitch, she's like, bitch totally didn't cover the colloquial thing. So I wrote it.
Yes. I was like, you go girl.
Yeah. And then they have comedians that talk about the colloquial use of the words. And that is just hilarious. Like just in the way that comedians are so great with wordplay when they go through the iterations of how words can have different meanings by inflections and stuff. So like 25 minute type episodes per, so it's not even that long. So highly recommended if you're not offended by such language. And I assume since you've lasted this long in the podcast, you aren't. just a lot of fun. I wanted to mention, I was just reading Tricksters getting released on the CW. So for any Americans that might be listening, you'll have a chance to watch this if you didn't catch it on Canada's CBC network. I enjoyed the series. It's definitely a different sensibility around mythic stories involving Aboriginals, mostly Aboriginal. There was some controversy with Michelle Latimer claiming, I forget, that she was a member of or had heritage that she didn't actually have. And a big part of the reason her production company got the show was because she had sold the author on having these indigenous roots. But having, in spite of that, the show did hire many, many indigenous people and consultants. And I think did a good job on that side of it. So personally, and she's resigned from the season two. So personally, I would not, unlike other situations, like with Max Landis, I don't see it as quite the same situation. I would boycott the show for that. Yeah. And so what? Oh, I caught season eight of Mom, which I haven't watched forever. Apparently Anna Faris has left the show because it was just Alice and Janie and William Fichtner and like the AA.
Yeah.
True. Janie and Fincher are so good. And the whole ensemble cast is so good. I actually enjoyed those episodes quite a bit. So I might actually start watching that again.
It's actually one of those shows that Dan and I have continued to watch, and we weren't sure how it was going to play out when Anna Faris left. And it's basically exactly the way that it worked out when the kids stopped being a part of the show. It's like they just kind of, you know, conveniently left to live with their father. And now she's conveniently left to go to school and she'll never come back. And you know what? The show has been A-OK without her. So I'm totally okay with this.
I always root for Faris, but I am the first to admit she doesn't have a lot of range. Like,
well, but I think that she left out of her own. She made the decision to leave. It's not like they pushed her out.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yeah, I think the decision was hers to leave, and they decided to go on without her, and the show is totally fine for it. Yeah. So,
So Star Trek Discovery wrapped up, and there's still some mixed feelings about season three, but season three totally worked for me. It really felt like Discovery was a part of the Star Trek franchise now. And I liked it. And don't need to say anything more than that.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. You know, it's funny because I have a friend who, I don't know if he's like a regular Star Trek fan, like if he's regularly watched Star Trek, or if Star Trek is kind of this passing thing that sort of comes in and out for him. But I know that he was really into season one and two, and he really didn't like season three. And I was like, well, season three is the season that makes it really feel like Star Trek. Like the first two seasons were good, but they weren't, like they didn't feel like I don't know. I don't want to say that they didn't feel like Star Trek because it's all Star Trek, but it didn't feel like part of the universe, like you say. And this season, I thought the show kind of came into its own and found its like place within the Star Trek canon. And I thought it was really good. Like I'm not sure I love like the final couple of episodes, like the whole thing with the burn and how that's all been kind of resolved. I don't know if it's, I don't want to say it's a cop out. It just feels like,
oh, it was total shit. I thought,
yeah, right. Like it just feels like such a not lazy. Like the concept of the burn is so interesting.
Yes,
and then you chalk it up to that, and it's
it
like,
was lame. It was really lame. I thought.
It's not alone.
I don't know how that passed muster. Quite honestly,
Neither do I. It just feels like the writer's room, like what they like ran out of ideas of how to deal with the burn, and just leave it for another season. Like who cares?
And I can't even believe that because there's so much talent involved all over, and you know it wasn't because they lacked the effects budget. Like a lot of times, you'll get a lame solution like that because they don't have the money to do some big production thing, but clearly those final three episodes had a lot of production money behind them. Yeah. So that was not it.
But I do like where they've ended the season and I like where it looks like they'll be going. Like yes. I feel like I'm enjoying it, but then I'm the person that also really loved Voyager. So
actually there is so much Voyager love out there. Voyager for me was hit and miss for reasons. But I still overall understood why people liked it. And my observation has been Voyager has more love now than I think it did when it was in production. And you certainly, read a lot of accounts of people, particularly women, that were like, no, Voyager was like, you know, Janeway was my idol. I did shit because I saw Janeway as an example. So. In spite of that, I still enjoyed Discovery. I think might be the way of saying that with the conclusion. So I think it's worth noting, yeah, for people that were maybe still watching it or were wondering that you might not get as much satisfaction on the ending of that particular storyline. But overall, like you said, I really like where the series ended. They had some really great characters and the chemistry between the cast is amazing. So yeah, thumbs up.
Are you watching The Expanse?
Oh, I was going to mention The Expanse. That was almost next. Okay, yes. The Expanse is my favorite sci-fi of quite like a whole bunch of time. Because it hasn't quite wrapped up and I already mentioned it, I was just going to throw out for The Expanse that I am just so loving where the story is going, and especially with Amos's character, which is apparently based on a book called The Churn, which was kind of a between book in the major series. But God, they're just knocking it out of the park. And I wanted to recommend Wes Chatham, who plays Amos, and Ty Frank, who's one of the writers of the show and the book. This is the amazing thing too, is the book, you know, the book authors are involved in the show. Well, I think that goes to a big part of why the quality is there. But they do an after show and it's on YouTube and it's called I Tie in That Guy, I think is what it's called. But if you just Google like Expanse after
show, I love it.
It is so great because I mean, you know, Ty Frank's the writer, Chatham is acting on it, and he is also really in to craft and the making. So the conversation is really, really interesting. And they typically interview at least one or two people from the show each episode, like major show. And of course it's an officially sanctioned after show, so they have that in. The one with the showrunner, Naren, is just, it's fucking, if you're into film craft, this is an amazing show. Like when they're just talking about production decisions and how the show goes and the complexities of putting together the show. Like I was in heaven. I eat this stuff up and I was in heaven. But even with, the guy that Jane? What Jane? He played the detective.
Oh, Thomas Jane.
Thomas Jane. Thank you. He directed one of the shows. And so they're interviewing him. And wow, this, I could take or leave some of his acting. I really liked him in The Expanse. He's been hit or miss in other stuff, but he was fascinating to see in person just doing his thing. And he clearly gives zero fucks for like establishment and stuff. He's just his own kind of guy. And he was totally into like doing the directing. So that was a fun anyway. So yes, if you like the show and you like, you like the getting the inside stuff, I definitely recommend this YouTube series.
Sweet.
What else was I think that's, oh, I just, so The Mandalorian wrapped up and another great season. I enjoyed it. I'm a bit scared about how many new shows are spawning off. And they named the child Grogu. What the fuck? Like, I think that is the only sour.
I don't know. It's freaking Star Wars. I don't care.
Oh God. And that's it for TV for me.
Okay. So, I'm like, where do I start? So I caught up on The Crown. I watched the last two seasons that I had missed. The only thing I want to say is this show is so great. Gillian Anderson as Margaret Thatcher is like out of this world of me.
If she doesn't win an award, something's wrong.
I fully agree. Like, I'm generally a Gillian Anderson fan anyways, but like she is like on another level here. She is. It's not even that she's mimicking Margaret Thatcher. It's that like she captures the essence as well. It's uncanny. It's amazing. And I really like Emma Corrin as Diana. She's also really good. She was the other new addition for the season. And I'm really enjoying her turn as well. So The Crown, it's great. Yes, everybody loves it. Blah, blah, blah. Done. So Bridgerton, I would be remiss not to mention this because this has Marina written fucking all over it. I don't know how I waited until the new year to watch it. How I didn't sit down on Christmas Day and just mainline the whole thing is beyond me. Mostly because I probably didn't realize I was going to love it this much. and mostly because there's a couple of reasons for that. For one, it's based on a series of books by Julia Quinn, who is an author who I have tried reading and have never gotten into. She writes, you know, romance novels, I guess, like bodice rippers. And I like bodice rippers, but I don't like her style of writing. So I've never, like, I saw that. I was like, nah, whatever. I'll get to it eventually. And this is the first thing I've ever watched out of the Shonda Rhimes universe, just as what it is. So it's shocking to me that this is the showrunner is a man. Because it feels like it touches on all the female sensibilities. So it's a Regency romance. It breaks, you know, everybody's talked about it by this point. All to say, it's like, it's so a Marina show. I love it. It's everything I want out of a period drama, plus more. So, yeah, it's quite nice. I really, really enjoyed it a lot. I'm disappointed that I watched it so fast because now who knows when we'll get more. Ah, oh, the Duke. So that kind of started my, sorry.
Oh, I just wanted to jump in. I actually, speaking of The Expanse, I actually went back to season one and watched them all in a row. And I'm so glad I did because I hadn't realized what I'd forgotten. And also seeing the things that they were setting in the early seasons that paid off in the later seasons, I would have never seen that. So I don't think you should regret watching all of those series. Like, as I don't know if you actually, you know, qualified as a marathon, but watching them quickly back to back, because I mean, there's something to be said for having that time to think about those episodes. But if the series is the kind of series where they are building in that kind of detail, then it's definitely worth watching them without much gap between.
Agree. There's certainly some things that Dan and I have been binge watched that have done better because of that. Lost was one of them. Because I think we had binge watched like the first, I don't know, six seasons of Lost, and then, you know, caught up with the last whatever there were, two or three at the end, like in real time. But it that show is really also one of those that's more beneficial if you've watched it all in one or very close together. But sorry, back to period dramas. So Bridgerton kind of, I mean, I always love a good period drama, and I had so many on my to-watch list that I kind of went, oh, what do I watch next? So I finally caught up with The Spanish Princess. So this is interesting because I knew that they had been, that stars had gone pretty deep with Philippa Gregory, who is another sort of period historical fiction author. I guess she's more historical fiction and not so much bodice ripper. But I didn't realize that the White Princess, and then there was another one that they did, and now this one, they're all based kind of off of her books and in like some sort of chronological order, which I hadn't realized. So The Spanish Princess is about Catherine of Aragon and Henry VIII. And it was only ever intended to be two seasons, and both seasons have now wrapped. So the show, this particular entry into like the history of Europe, is wrapped. And it ends just as Catherine is basically banished from court and goes off with Mary to wherever. And Henry starts taking a long string of mistresses. I really enjoyed it. I really like Emma Frost's take on the history, because the history is all told from the female perspective. Usually when you get these kinds of movies, they're all, or shows, they're always about like the king's perspective. And he's like, besides the point, nobody fucking cares about this guy who's like a total douchebag anyways. But the woman that plays, one of the things I really, really liked is that they don't play Catherine of Aragon as this like untouchable queen who was like all good, and like she is clearly a woman with many shades, and Charlotte Hope plays her as this very unlikable character for most of the two seasons. Like towards the end of season two, it's hard not to feel bad for her because she's been so wronged. But she's still not likable. Like, she's not this soft, really nice, like, lady that you want to just, like, hug. You're like, you're a bitch. But however, you need it to be in order to survive. And that's the way it goes. And it's beautiful. And it's, you know, really high production values. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was wonderful. And it both seasons are available on Amazon Prime. And it's a Starz show. So if you have Starz, it's also on demand on Starz. And then shifting gears completely, Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan. Because I had started watching it, I don't know, like a year ago. And then I'd watched a couple of episodes and put it on the back burner. So I've been doing some really boring data entry work. And so I have this, I've been watching stuff. Basically, I'm like listening to TV shows because I don't want to listen to all my podcasts at once. So I've been watching Jack, like I've been watching stuff that doesn't require a whole lot of attention. I really like Jack Ryan. I like John Krasinski as Jack Ryan. I think he's really good. The shows are fun. Like the first season was about, you know, they go to Afghanistan for reasons. Like, he's a data analyst and he ends up in the middle of all these shenanigans. So he's a data analyst that ends up in Afghanistan, like, saving the universe. And then he's a data analyst who ends up in Caracas in the middle of, like, you know, collapse and stuff happens. It also co-stars Wendell Pierce, who is so good. And I think the way that they left him in season two, he's probably not coming back for season three, which would be really sucky, but I assume they're going to do a season three. I don't know. They're just fun to watch. Like he's just really engaging and the stories are really interesting and they have like this political angle that is based in reality. And so they feel like they're not totally crazy. And that world is something that I find really interesting that I generally wouldn't read about, but I like watching it. So, hey, there's that. And I didn't notice until like partway through season two that the show's executive produced by Michael Bay. I'm like, Michael Bay, man, you're who needs to direct stuff when you can just produce really good TV? And then Dan and I have been watching Yellowstone. So this is a show that has long been on our watch list, and they've just, I don't know if they just added it to Amazon. I think they did. So they have like the three seasons that are out now are now on Amazon Prime. So we've been watching a couple of episodes. We started by watching like one or two episodes, and now we watch like two or three episodes a night. It's so good. It started off like Dallas on crack, and now it's just like its own thing. It's so wonderful. So it's executive produced by Ty Sheridan, who has his own sort of way of doing things. He has a very specific aesthetic, and of course, it stars Kevin Costner as the patriarch of this ranch in Montana. And it's basically the family drama of what's happening so that, you know, they have to keep this ranch afloat. It also co-stars Kelly Riley. So Kevin Costner has three sons and a daughter, and his wife is long dead for reasons. So there's lots of family strife. One of the sons dies like almost right away. So now you have this fallout where he doesn't think he has enough sons to like keep the ranch going. I'm like, I don't understand this. This is so not Marina's cup of tea. But then like there's this guy who's played by, his name is Rip. He's played by Cole Hauser, who is like, him and Kevin Costner are like the two actors on this show that feel like real cowboys. Like, you look at them and you're like, yes, I believe that you're actually ranchers and you're actual cowboys who actually ride horses. Like, even the way they casually stand, they just feel like they're so comfortable in the jeans and the hat and the boots. All the other actors are like there's one scene, I don't know, at the end of some episode where Kevin Costner is standing with Luke Grimes, who's his like his other son, and they're standing there, and Kevin Costner just looks so casual and in silhouette, and Luke Grimes looks so uncomfortable. He's like standing there with his hands in his pockets, and I'm like, yeah, okay. But I mean, all this to say, there's lots of drama, there's lots of action, there's always somebody trying to, you know, take the ranch for reasons, and it's really good. And it's occasionally like really violent, and it's this, you know, it's just like this modern Western, I guess. It's still a little bit like Dallas, except on a ranch.
It's what time period is this set in?
It's modern.
Modern? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's modern. Yeah, yeah, for sure. So it's interesting. It's, I mean, it's not realistic, I don't think. I hope not. But yeah, it's just, it's family drama and everything else that goes with it. And it's more Kevin Costner, which you can never go wrong with as far as I'm concerned. So yeah, Yellowstone. And that's, we just finished season two. So yeah, we've been busy. And that's the majority of the TV that we've been watching. Do you have any podcasts?
No podcasts for me, actually.
I do have one that I wanted to mention that I just finished. It's a CBC podcast called Brainwashed. It's hosted by Michelle Shepard, who is an investigative journalist. And it is about the CIA's mind control experiment, starting with the Cold War all the way to MKUltra. Now, you might be wondering, because CBC usually does Canadian content, like they're very specific about it having to have some sort of Canadian connection. So the Canadian connection here is that this all ties in to Dr. Ewan Cameron, who was like at one point the head of the Canadian, the American, and the World Psychiatric Associations. Like he was this renowned shrink. And he was the head of the Allen Memorial Institute in Montreal, which was a cutting edge hospital in like, I guess the 40s. And the CIA funneled money to him for experiments on mind control, essentially. I think it's only like 8 episodes. It's so, 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 so fascinating. Totally worth it. I like mainlined that show once I started listening to it. I'm like, oh, this is good. And then they started talking about MKUltra, and I'm like, are you for real? It's wonderful. Conspiracies and stuff, it's totally, totally worth it.
Yeah, I haven't heard the podcast, but I heard her speak at the Vancouver Podcast Festival.
Oh, awesome.
And yeah, there's some pretty messed up shit in there, man. Like,
oh yeah,
they destroyed some people's lives.
Totally. I actually have been looking around to see if there's like, because I'm assuming that there's probably some more material about, you know, the Institute and Dr. Ewan and the material, like just the stuff that they were doing is, it's crazy. It's insane. The whole thing is just nuts. But yeah, it's a really, really, really good podcast. I'd highly, highly, highly recommend it.
Yeah, I think it won some awards. There was one thing I was going to mention with podcasts now that I think of it, and it's kind of a RIP. One of my favorite podcasts is wrapping up Oppo with Sandy Garasino and Jen Gershon. So that makes me sad because I really enjoyed their take on politics. It's going to be replaced as part of the whole Candleland series. So they're apparently going to come up with a different political show, but we'll see. We'll see if it, well, it won't be the same because especially Jen Gershon, I love her take on things. Makes me sad. Although if you want more Jen Gershon, she started up a newsletter, like a Stack. What the hell is it called? Substack. So her new undertaking is kind of interesting. It's not quite to my taste, but she's created a basically a publication with a website, and you can get it emailed to you where she's getting people to submit editorials. So different takes on things. And the idea is to have the kind of conversation that you could never have on Twitter. Like, so to present alternate opinions on things, like, and different takes, but not in a highly charged kind of people will take umbrage because this complicated thought got boiled down to like 200 characters.
Mm-hmm. I will mention one more podcast that I've mentioned, I'm sure, multiple times before, but speaking about podcasts that are kind of wrapping up. So Trump Inc. is in the process of not completely wrapping up, but it's not going to be as regular as it has been up until now. So this week or this past week, depending on when you're listening to this, they did their second to last episode, which was kind of looking at the future of Donald Trump and his businesses after he leaves office. And then they're going to go deeper into that with their sort of kind of final episode. They were saying they're going to have more updates kind of as, you know, the year progresses and things unravel. And that this second to last episode where they kind of talk about the future of Trump outside office and what that could mean for him going forward is really fascinating.
Oh, and yeah.
It got at a couple of things that I had kind of heard about, but hadn't really heard, really explored. And yes, there was some really, really fascinating stuff in there. So if you're at all curious and interested, Trump Inc. is a fantastic ongoing open investigation into the business of Trump.
Oh man. You know, I'm fascinated by that, but I think emotionally, I'm not sure I could handle more of his fuckery.
No.
It's so depressing.
The show is not so much about him, but more about like the business of it,
yeah.
Which I think is really fascinating in its own right, because he's a weird character.
Oh, but man.
Alas, I'll end there.
Yeah.
Any books?
Do you know, I actually, 3 books.
Woohoo! Crazy.
It's a record. More of the John Cleaver series, I'm Not a Serial Killer, by Dan Wells, and it's more of the same of that book. He's a probable psychopath who's struggling with not becoming a serial killer and encounters these supernatural things that deserve killing. So in a very Dexter kind of way, he just lets his inner monster out. I think the first one was called Mr. Monster. It's really well written. I get so, like, I marathon the book. I can't help it. And it's kind of scary how fascinating it is being in this kind of first person. I think it's called First Person Limited. Like, you're only in the main character's head. That's the only perspective you have. And there's a lot of inner monologue, and I find it fascinating and the story compelling. And unfortunately, book 3 is not in the library, and this is an old series, so I'm searching for book 3. The second one is a new author I discovered. The book's called The Murder of Mages by Marshall Ryan Maresca, and it's a fantasy set in a wholly fictional world that's kind of a medieval world, and there's sorcery. It's the world building is really good. The author, I mean, being a guy, I can't definitively say this, but the main character in this, he's done a bunch of series in this world. The main character in this particular series is a woman, and it feels like a really good woman's perspective in the book. Like it's similar to our world where there's prejudices and stuff. And basically her husband, who was a police officer, has become an invalid. And so she cons her way into becoming a police officer herself to make the money so the family doesn't become poor, which on the offset sounds kind of lame. And I was kind of going into it going, well, this is kind of a bit of a trope. But then there's these wonderful reveals about what this character did before and where her competencies come from. And I found it a really fun read. It was another one that I ate up, and I'm looking forward to the next one in the series. The last book is actually nonfiction. It's called Do Nothing by Celeste Headlee. She wrote a book on how to talk to people. This book is very similar to that in that she spends 2/3 of the book justifying why you should pay attention. And with her previous book, she did the same thing. And if you're already interested, like if you're already sold on the premise, that's not as interesting. That to me there was some interesting stuff. In this one, she talks about the history of work and how we kind of got to where we are with the way people are like hooked into social media and always on call for work and stuff. And so some of that was interesting. This one didn't speak to me quite as much because I don't have the particular sets of problems she has with work. I work for a great company, but I still found her kind of ways of detoxing interesting. So it was an okay read. I don't think this is for me a bestseller, but I also think it's the kind of book that if it's what you're looking for, it's a fairly well-written and well-thought-out book. So if you're kind of feeling overworked and wondering why and looking for some solutions, I would suggest checking this book out. That's my books.
I'm still trying to finish. I just give up at this point. It's just not happening.
Are you reading Dostoevsky?
I don't know. Fuck no, not even. I'm reading Veronica Roth, which is like YA at its basic. I don't even know. I've been trying to read this for like 6 months, it feels like. And I know I should probably just give up on it, but I literally have like 40 pages left and I'm like, I don't even know if there's 40 pages. I pick it up and I'll read a chapter and I'm like, oh yeah, okay, we're here. And it's kind of interesting, but it's also kind of not. And kind of, so I'm like, whatever. So I don't pick it up again for a while. And now it's just this thing that, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. So I'm thinking I may start listening to, there was a period of time like in the middle of last year as the pandemic was like in full force where I wasn't walking as much. And so like the podcast started like piling up. So I've had, I felt like hundreds of podcasts to catch up on, and I've been like making a really good dent into them. And I've been listening, like my Marc Maron back catalog is almost like caught up. And then once I run out of those, I'm kind of caught up. So I'm thinking I might start listening to audiobooks on my walks just to try to get some more reading done. If you can call it reading, if they're audiobooks, like, I don't know.
But 40 pages, the book is telling you it's not your book if you have 40 pages. I don't know. Maybe read the last 5 pages so that you get the ending done. And then,
you know what the worst part is? The worst part isn't that it's only like 40 pages left. The other worst part is that this is book one in a 3-book series. And I'm probably not going to read the remainder of them because I'm just so not interested.
Yeah.
I have like 50 pages left.
Well, walk away. How many pages total in the book?
Like 470.
Oh my God, Marina.
I know. I'm sorry.
If you made it that far and you can't get across the finish line, that book is not for you.
I know, but I feel like I know. This is all to say that I still haven't finished Carve the Mark, so I don't know what that says about this book.
I think, said, you should read the last 5 pages, then you can say you finished it. And I'm going to do an intervention. I'm going to run over some Roanoke because I think you'll really enjoy that story. And it's a quick read and you'll get your mojo back.
Well, and it's funny because we were out earlier today, and I mean, I still have a bunch of books that I need. Like, I have a to-be-read pile that's like huge, humongous. But of course, we were out, and I'm like, oh, that looks really good. Maybe I'll pick that up. I bought a new book. So, yeah, I may just drop the other one and read this instead. We'll see.
Oh, I have so much aspirational reading sitting on my bookshelf.
Don't we all? Like, literally, my bookshelves over Christmas. This happened to me once before last year. I think I mentioned it on the show. I was sitting at home at my desk doing some work, and I heard a big bang, and literally a shelf had collapsed, and I had to remove half of the books that were on there and find another spot for them. And they just keep piling up. I say I'm going to read them. So this year, I am committed to reading the 12 books. That was my, I decided to cut back and just, you know, go in moderation. I am going to read 12 this year, I promise. I think I'm just going to give up on this one and call it a day and move on to something new. I promise to have a book read by the time we talk again.
My personal experience, especially with the Dan Wells and the Maresca books, I'd forgot, and I don't know why I'd forget. It's like so stupid. It's like, oh yeah, this is what it's like when I get a book I really enjoy. I can't put it right down. As opposed to right? The books. I had Do Nothing, I think, for 2 months, and I'd pick it up and I'd put it down. I pick it up and I put it down. And then I picked up A Murder of Mages and I just ripped right through it. It's like, oh yeah.
Yeah. I need something like that to get me back into the swing of things. I actually have something that I picked up at a book crossing before this whole world went to shit. It's called What Would Jane Austen Do? And I think that might be kind of my work my way back into reading.
I'm intrigued by the title. That's a great title.
Yeah. It is a really great title. So I think maybe I'll pick that up next to ease me back in. And yeah. I think I'm done with this one. I'm just going to chalk it up to it's one of these things that I'm like, I'm so close. I want to finish it, but
yeah.
The reality of it is I haven't finished it in like 6 months. So I'm probably not going to finish it. Yet.
There's no dishonor in that in my book. It's like, if a book doesn't talk to you, don't waste your time. There's so many good books out there. So many good books.
It's true.
You are free.
I say look because I'm going to do this on video. The bookmark's coming out.
Whoa.
That happened.
That's commitment to right. Yes.
I give up. And with that, we've been taught I'm afraid to wonder how long this show would have been if Colleen had been with us.
Oh, I know. It's like we maybe waited too long or something.
Maybe.
Well part of it was the December break. I did see a lot more stuff than normal.
Yeah, and Bill had sent me our friend Bill at the occasional green screen of death because that show comes and goes. But Bill had asked we'd been talking about doing like a top of the year list, and we were going to get like a whole group of people together. And I'm like, oh yeah, okay, that'll be our next show. And then he's like, no, I was thinking about the end of January. I'm like, okay, well, I can't wait that long, Tara. Get the show on the road. So this was fun. It was nice to catch up.
It was so nice to catch up. Yes. Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah. I just thought about that. I'm like, we didn't even say Happy New Year. We just went into it like nothing had happened. Oh, well, it is what it is. It is what it is. But we will, if you've listened this far, congratulations. I don't know for what. Thanks for sticking with us. We'll link to all of the stuff we talked about in the show notes today at atcpod.ca. So be sure to come on by and check it out if you're interested in anything that we talked about. You don't have to take show notes. You don't have to take notes as we talk. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with another show, one that is hopefully not an hour and 40 minutes. Until next time.
We'll see you after the credits.